Is he okay?
I haven't heard.
Oh.
I just heard he wasn't going to be.
Okay, good morning, counselors. It's the county manager meeting at 10:04 on Wednesday, February 4th. We have three agenda items for you this morning, all three of which I think represent good news stories. And hopefully we have an hour scheduled. I checked your schedules, though, and you have nothing at 11. So if we go long, that'll be just fine. First up on the agenda is Sheriff Atkins, and we also have the sheriff. We'll just do some introductions, I guess.
Absolutely. Sheriff Dave Brown from Skamania County. Dave Whitmire. I started to call him Windermere, so I didn't want to do that. Whitmire. And you all know Under Sheriff Mike Cook, Chief Bishop, Mr. Royer, and myself as well.
So they have a very interesting proposal. I'm not sure that they need board blessing to execute, but it's certainly we do. Great. But certainly it's a great idea, and I'll just turn the floor over to the sheriff and let you know.
They don't need board blessing, but they certainly have it.
Well, if we don't need it, we can probably just all get up and go. No.
No, we want to be your cheerleaders.
Now. There you go. Well, we want to be real prudent with your time because we know you have a busy day. So I'm going to turn it right over to Chief Bishop, and he's going to get right into the meat and potatoes of it.
Good morning.
You're good.
Okay. All right. Good morning. This morning's briefing is on some proactive steps we're taking following up from last September in anticipating our population at the jail. And some relief valves or some other ways of managing our jail population in 2015. So, just to bring you up to speed, during the last 5 years, the Clark County Average Inmate Daily Population, or ADP, has grown by 10%. We've gone from 685 inmates to 761 inmates as of December 31st, 2014. The increase of the overall population is contrary to the national jail population, which during the same period of time has dropped by 5%. The areas of significant growth are in particular our felony pretrial population, which has grown 30% in the last 5 years, and our Department of Corrections Offender Accountability Act, or DOC-OAA, offenders have dropped by almost 30% and then risen back up during the same period of time. So we are equal from 2010 to 2014. That drop was as a result of the Department of Corrections supervision model in the community called Swift and Certain. In September, we were here before you anticipating the population growth and bringing that Offender Accountability Act money to ask for 9 new positions to open up our HPOD and jail work center. We're diligently recruiting for those positions, and we will be opening up those areas later this year and early next year. That's a total of 141 beds. 141.
What's the pod by itself?
HPOD is 45, and the rest of the JWC jail work center is 96. So it's 141 total.
Okay, the whole jail is 141.
No. Those are the new beds we're opening.
I thought it was like 100 less than that.
We're pretty prudent with your money, and we can stretch it. Reopening. They're not new. They're reopening. Okay.
How long have they been closed?
JWC has been 3 years, and HPOD was in 2008 when we all lost some revenue here. To compound our growing population, Governor Inslee on January 19th unveiled his plan to reduce prison time for offenders convicted of property crimes, diverting them from prison and putting them out into the community under community supervision. What that means to us here in Clark County is we'll have more community corrections officers from the Department of Corrections and more offenders in our community being supervised, and the sanctions for those offenders who don't follow their supervision will be served at the Clark County Jail, which will be under the OAA, or Offender Accountability Act, contract. In other words, we expect our population to go up faster. Last December, we became aware that Skamania County was losing timber revenue and was facing a shortage of money to operate their jail. They had jail beds open. We are projecting the need for jail beds. They were going to lose some staff members, and Sheriff, you can jump in any time. And we reached out to them in a good partnership, good neighbor partnership, to see if they would lease us beds for our anticipated growth. There are several positive community outcomes for this. We're proactively managing the Clark County jail population and causing or creating a relief valve so that we can move inmates over to Skamania County and provide more jail bed service for our cities and our county. We're taking advantage of Skamania County's capacity, and we're being good neighbors by saving some jobs over there and making sure that they have bed space for their local offenders as well. Yes, sir.
I'm very interested in the Skamania County and us being a really good neighbor for them. I work very closely with Commissioner Chris Brong over there and very much tuned into the tragedy that's unfolding there with the squandering of the resources in their forests. They have all that timber revenue and they're not caring for it. They're not harvesting it. Everybody's losing in that. And for us to be a good neighbor to somehow help them to have the resources they need to operate their counties, that's just very good. I'm interested also in your previous point in the governor's agenda to somehow take people that have been convicted of property crimes and getting them out of jail early. At least at the state level, that's what it sounds like, and then somehow bringing them back and putting them back into the community, assuming that they're going to be supervised and they're not going to reoffend. Do I have that right?
Governor Inslee's model is based on some research that the Department of Correction has done on best supervision practices, and I don't know how effective they are. I'm not here to comment on his plan, but what he's doing is placing them back in the community and stretching they're facing a prison bed challenge. And this is the way they've got a three-prong approach. They're looking at cutting their costs, stretching their beds, and then looking at trying to break the cycle of recidivism by community supervision. That's the governor's plan. I can send you the link to the news article.
Just politically, I wouldn't think the governor would run for re-election thinking, yeah, we're going to get the people that have been convicted of property crimes out of jail and back into the community. I would not think that would be a winning strategy for our governor.
I understand, sir.
That also puts extra burden upon our county. Does this come with the extra funds in order to provide for that?
Yes, we have the contract is in place. The Department of Corrections Offender Accountability Act contract is in place, and we do get paid $81.97 a day for each offender day that is housed at our jail.
In that position?
And that is covering our costs right now.
I do have a follow-up question to that. When we talk about property crimes, we are not we're talking crimes that there is no physical contact and no violence. Is that correct?
That's the standard definition. I have not seen the governor's plan in detail, so I really am not an expert on it.
Understood, but that's a different context than, for example, a burglary or whatever.
Burglary is a property crime, ma'am.
It's a... Really? Okay.
Breaking and entering into a home is a property crime. Stealing a car, breaking into a car is a property crime.
And like I said, I'd be happy to send you the governor the link to the news articles from January 19th where we did our research so you can get the detail.
In my mind, just as a civilian and as a policymaker, it's a different story stealing an unoccupied vehicle off the street, still not pleasant, than a burglary, which really you have the potential to have an encounter with a homeowner.
And of course.
And
I understand completely. I agree. Going back to our steps for us to complete the idea of leasing beds from the Skamania County Jail, we're working on what we call classification or screening to make sure that folks go into their jail meet their criteria. We have toured their facility. It will meet our needs. And we're actually looking at screening on a different criteria than we've used in the past. We will be looking for addresses in Skamania County so that we've had in the past 10, 15 years, you'll see other states board inmates in across the country. And there have been problems where they can't keep contact with their friends and family. So we're actually looking for addresses in Skamania County from folks who live up there, whose families are up there, and from East Clark County. So that the, if the very least, if they live in Washougal, the trip to Skamania may be just as long as the trip to Vancouver for visiting. So we'll be screening those folks for those criteria.
So I understand correctly, regardless of where they live, if they commit a crime in our county, they get jailed with our current policy in our jail.
Correct.
And if they are, so what you're saying is if they're East County or if they're Skamania County,
it would be make more sense for those relationships, for those people in their circle, hopefully family and friends that have some good sense to them, to stay in contact with them. Healthy
yes.
relationships, hopefully.
Yes. Yes. We're just learning from mistakes other agencies have made in the past. We just don't wish to. We'll make our own mistakes. We don't need theirs.
If we increase
our bed population here, I mean our bed capacity here, and we increase our capacity there, is this mainly, because it's going to take us a while to get our own ability to house inmates here in these currently closed facilities. So certainly that's something you can do right away, because I expect they're ready to go.
There. Well, you actually hit upon the next topic. And if I can go right there, I'll be happy to do that for you.
I'll follow your lead.
Thank you. We actually, on the Darren can explain, we actually have a commitment to the county council to house a population that meets our revenue requirements. And Darren?
So I just handed out a kind of visual aid to track this. There's some different components to the revenue stream we're talking about here. Everything in green below that dotted line, this is kind of a review of what's gotten us to this point. We have $1 million per year of revenue that's committed as a base. And then on top of that is excess revenue that really started to pick up last year. And that is that over $1 million, that first chunk, $755,000, is what we used to fund those 9 corrections positions that we added last October. So that's a commitment now in the revenue stream. On top of that, we want to make sure there's a bit of a revenue cushion there to just deal with volatility before we actually start digging into what we need to fund those 9 positions. So the base, this existing DOC revenue estimate is about $2 million a year, and we actually overachieved for 2014 on that. So looking forward at the proposal we're talking about here today is everything above that line, and that is the potential of using the Skamania County release valve, pressure release valve, to manage our population for up to 15 inmates per day. If we were to cap that out at 15 days every day, then the revenue coming in from DOC would be the combination of those two orange blocks. The darker one is what then we would turn around and pay to Skamania County. So we get just under $82 a day from the state for each inmate, and we would pay Skamania County $55 a day. So the dark section is what we would pay Skamania, and that lighter section on top is what we would retain, essentially, what we would retain as being the direct contractor with DOC and so on. So it's really a benefit to the county. It's obviously a benefit to Skamania County. And using this pressure release valve means that these additional 15 potential inmates don't use up jail space that we need locally or for this growth in the DOC population that the chief is talking about.
Well, and back to your question about the population, the number on the right with the dotted line there, it says based on 67 beds per day. We take a monthly report and we look at our average daily population for that month. So an example would be, in December, I ran that report, and our average daily population was 76 per day. So that is 9 over the 67 we need to protect that obligation. So I would turn around to Chief Waymeyer and say, I need 9 beds a day for January. And we would work out the transport details and the classification details. Yesterday, I ran the report for January. That report came back, and we had a seasonal dip, which we expected, at 68 average bed days. So I'd call the good chief and say, yep, we're down to, I'm only going to do 1 per day now for the next month because my population is down. That way we protect that obligation that Darren outlined in those green bars, and we know that our excess, we're not spending money that we're not bringing in, and those beds that are going above, we'll need later this summer. I'm extremely confident we're going to need those beds.
The transportation to get these prisoners back and forth, is that factored into this? Is that much of a cost?
Already pre-established. We run twice a week to Skamania County on the east-west mini chain. So we've already discussed that, and we've already factored it in.
It's a matter of how many passengers those vehicles are going to carry.
It's a matter of how big our van's going to be. We've got different size vans.
How many days are they typical for inmates to sit in the jail? I assume that they're going to somehow, what we're putting them in there with one of, I think, two different reasons that they're sitting in jail. One is they're waiting for a court date.
Mm-hmm.
Two is they're just paying their penalty.
They're sitting off their sentence. So the average length of stay is just over 16 days. Yes, 1-6. So we'll be looking at people, as I said, with that classification criteria, with those East County addresses, with a longer... It doesn't make any sense to move them up there for 2 days and move them back. And we've actually had a discussion that if they live up in Skamania County, we may just release right up there. That way it saves them the problem of trying to find transportation back.
So they can initially book them, even though it's a Clark County offense?
We'll book them here. Once they're sentenced, we won't do the pretrial with the court dates. It wouldn't be cost efficient to move them back and forth. So we'll wait till we'll have a sentenced population that has the longer length of stay, that has the proper geographic location.
So they'll normally
start here, and when things get all in order, and then they have a date established, they need to return
back if we need to.
So there's a very important role for the council to play here, and that is that orange, dark orange section there. The dollars that of this additional revenue that we would pay to Skamania County is not appropriated. It's not in the budget right now. So the role for the council would be to authorize, and this is depicted on this visual as the maximum. If we had 15 inmates in the Skamania jail every day for the rest of this year and every day for all of next year, it would be about $550,000 we would pay them. $55 a day times 15 inmates. Now, we're going to probably on certain months be well under 15, but this at least creates the mechanism to go up to that limit. So the role for the board in the next supplemental would be to authorize this capacity so that we can pay Skamania. Now, as we come down off of that ceiling, that 15 max, let's say in a month it's 10, then the dark orange area, of course, shrinks, and the light orange area shrinks. Those proportions, though, stay the same. For every inmate that we take from DOC, we're collecting just under 82, and we're paying Skamania 55. So that retained piece would always be there.
Sounds great. I would encourage you to formulate the way you want it, assuming that we're on your team, and you have not because you ask not. I would say ask for what would give you the most flexibility that would somehow not create artificial boundaries that makes it inconvenient for you. Because is there a downside to this?
Okay, wait, Darren, do you need additional budget authority to actually pay Skamania County?
That's the dark orange section, right? That's okay.
So this spring you'll be asking for that?
Exactly.
Okay. Is that the piece you need from the board?
Sorry?
Is that the piece you need from the board?
Yes, that's the board's role in this. Is
spring? I mean, suppose you could have it today. Not that you could, but when would you implement this? Because certainly a regular schedule is, you know, the next open slot makes sense, but there's nothing that I'm aware of that says we can't somehow approve this early.
So our remaining steps are for the chief and I to sit down and work out the details, the actual schedules, the classifications. We have some details to work out. We already have a draft contract from the prosecutor's office, the boilerplate, and we're working on that. We codify all that, we get it written up, and we'll be back before the board on consent with that contract. March 1 is the target date, is what I'm looking for. And then 6 months after that, coming back and giving you an update on how this is working. With a request, because you'll notice that we do have a $250,000 in there that is a cushion. And we do have some plans that we're looking for to improve our conditions in our facility, a couple of additional staff that we'll talk about.
I think the counselor's question was, when will you begin to need to pay Skamania County, and when will you anticipate having the budget?
So the contract, March 1st, would come before the board, and they're ratification of that contract would give us, I think, the authority to proceed and then let the normal supplemental schedule happen.
Okay.
In March is when we'll submit that, and it'll be authorized.
So there might be a slight time lag?
Slight time lag, but if they approve the contract and we have clear signal
right.
from the council that the appropriation will be, in fact, added, then I think we're confident enough to go forward.
Yeah, and the board has done that in the past. We're in a session like this or in a consent hearing. You authorize something knowing full well that when the supplemental is submitted that it will be approved.
So whatever process is involved to do that, I would think the earliest opportunity that we have to say yes, whatever that can look like, I can only speak for myself, but I'd be very supportive of anything along those lines that would equip you to do this.
So a couple questions here. Are we looking at, for now, a two-year agreement?
I was looking at a one-year agreement, ma'am.
One year
and then
agreement.
We'll have a built-in, the prosecutor's office builds in clauses for either party to exit, depending on what goes on. Those are just typical outs of a contract. And then standard contract is a renewal, automatic renewal, unless there's some type of an adjustment.
Automatic?
If neither party wants to get out of the contract, it rolls over for another year.
Process if we're going out or if they're going out, what the time frame?
Yes, ma'am.
So, on the surface, this sounds like an excellent safety valve for us for Clark County because we are dealing with some issues, extensive issues. Jail population is part of it. So, Skamania County is also growing like crazy. And if you get a crime wave out there, you will be able to indicate if you're going to be exceeding, if temporarily transfers couldn't be done?
Yes. Henry, one of the things that...
We are currently not utilizing what we deem our old jail. We built a new facility in 2001, 50-bed capacity. The old facility still has capacity to hold up to 18, and I think we have a lot of wiggle room there. Our trustees population and our work crew population still utilizes the new facility. And I think our desire in talking with Chief Bishop is we would like to take as many as we can get. Right now, one of you asked about the downside to this, and really the only downside is from our perspective, and that is this anticipated revenue saved two corrections officer positions for us. Without it, I would have cut two more, which would have brought our total cut to nine. Across all different departments within the sheriff's office. That all happened last night with the passage of the supplemental budget by the board. So we just cut $1.5 million out because we didn't get the timber revenue. Without this $200,000, I'll cut two more immediately. So there's a downside. The upside is, if we can wrestle more than 15, we're going to take it. If we can get 15, we're going to be smiling. If we get 10 a day, we're going to be happy. I'm colorblind, so when Darren puts this in front of me, I'm challenged by that, and I'm not sure how I passed the psychological 30 years ago. So, but when Rick called in December and said, "Hey, I got an idea," and we sat down and started talking, and Sheriff took office, and we met a little bit about this, and they came and looked at the facility. This to me is a win-win for both Clark and Skamania, and I think to a certain extent for the offenders, especially those who live in East Clark County and Skamania. They're probably not going to care where they're housed, and certainly if there's some ease in their release process, I think that's a benefit to them. So we're extremely excited about this, and I know my staff is as well.
House these additional prisoners in the new facility as well?
It would have to be. We've had conversation about that. Our concern is obviously to meet the needs of Clark County's standard for housing, and they would be within the new facility.
I'm generally unsympathetic to people who end up there, but we have moral and legal obligations, so I'm glad to hear that that's already been a consideration in there. And I would have expected it to have been so. So let's talk about a little bit of a bigger picture. So we're talking about something that'll carry us forward for a while. In the bigger picture, over time, we're not going to probably get less criminals. Clark County is growing, and it's our desire to have it grow. So there will be, we'll call them more infractions and more prisoners over time for a lot of different reasons, because we know right now the jail does more than just house criminals. It houses some people that are in trouble, too. So, and we're working on that. So if we look 5 years down the road, and we're talking about sort of our region, I'm wondering, and maybe you and I can have a little talk about this, what is our plan going down the road? Because these facilities are so expensive to build. So you have to find a place, and yet it's difficult to spend money to build a jail for capacity for the future. It's difficult to sell to the public. It's difficult to get built state-of-the-art because of the costs and all those things. So I understand that. But I'm thinking out past the next few years. For now, this looks like an excellent solution. And I really appreciate that people have come forward and put their heads together and found something that is mutually agreeable. So funding it is sort of in our court. And we're certainly, I think we have two that are affirmatively inclined. It'll depend how much, of course, and how that fits into the budget, and we'll need both auditor and probably treasurer's office input on how all of it would need to come together.
Clarify, the appropriation we're asking for doesn't come out of existing general fund revenues. This would be an additional revenue stream from DOC on top of the $2 million we already have committed. So it's just recognizing that additional revenue coming in and then taking not all but a portion of it and appropriating it to pay Skamania, and then there'll be a portion we retain.
I'm sorry, can you tell me where that additional revenue is coming from? That's state?
Yes.
Just one short comment. I think it's important to understand that we're not trying to create new inmates or create any type of revenue stream based off of inmates. The plan is really about how do we efficiently manage our inmate population that we have in a facility that's already near capacity, and how do we manage those inmate populations in conjunction with another facility that's cost effective for everybody. And so really that's kind of the point of this whole thing. And just like you said, Councillor Stewart, we know those inmates are coming, and we know that those populations are going to increase as the county. So in a sense, this is maybe in a small way a building block towards how we think about the future in terms of how we manage inmate populations and not be siloed into a one-facility type of model and look at expanding into maybe more creative ways of managing those populations.
I'm curious. There's the time that the inmates spend in the jail. I assume it's not just simply treating it as though it's a hotel. Time out, you just sit there and spend your time. But instead, there's opportunity to receive counseling. Somehow they could be learning something. We could do whatever we can to, and there's already good things happening here. For instance, we have, I think, counselors that help them to exit in a way that they won't say, see you next week. Instead, we'll say, don't come back because we've helped you not to.
Yes.
What the environment is in Skamania Jail compared to what this is. Chief?
Yeah. Well, to answer that, first of all, we still have, and we are deeply entrenched in our philosophy. If you want help, we'll help you get the tools to break through cycle of recidivism. And if you don't, okay, you can do your time, but we're here to help. We're not going to force you because we don't have those resources. And you're correct. The county council approved two discharge planners to help us with the mentally ill. One of them's been on board now for a few months. The other one just finished up their background and is being hired next week. And they're working, and that's our HPOD for our mentally ill, and that's where they'll be stationed to help discharge people to make sure they get back into the community with the resources they need. As for Skamania County's resources, when I was up there, they have actually more multi-purpose library, more multi-purpose room than we have in our facility. They actually have more floor space, bed space than we have. Their programs, I'll have to let them speak to those. But an inmate looking at either facility, this is the one I would, you know, the one that you toured with me a couple of years ago.
As far as the facility goes, we have, as far as the programs go, we have a church service that comes in if they're interested in that. We have NA, we have AA that is available to them. We do have mental health counseling as well. So we have probably the things that you're looking for, we already have those in place, and those will still be offered to this population from Clark County. So
that is really refreshing to hear. For years, we haven't had the opportunity for those that would otherwise come in and minister to Bible studies and church services or whatever to be able to. That could be a life changer for some of these individuals. And so it sounds like there's opportunity in Skamania, and hopefully there'll be more opportunity in Clark County to accommodate and welcome those that can make a difference and change the heart.
Absolutely. We are working diligently each month to make those opportunities more available.
Is that it?
Yes, we'll bring a staff report forward with the contract agreement, and that would be the appropriate time to also ask you for a commitment on the funding, turning that new revenue into funding to pay for Skamania, and then we can certainly follow the established supplemental time. So next step would be a staff report.
That sounds so good. The cooperation of us being good neighbors to each other, where the inmates win, Skamania wins, Clark County wins, our jail staff wins all the way around. You guys, if you hit a home run, we're playing in the major leagues here. Well done.
We thank you for your time, and we also look forward to sitting down and talking about that short and long-term strategies for the jail and how that looks for the future. So we appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Well done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. County Manager. That's one home run. Do you got more?
Yeah, the score is going to be 3-0 when we're done. Okay, next subject on the agenda, you recognize Mark Gassaway at the podium, our finance director.
Our Mr. Transparency Champion.
Exactly right. He's going to make a brief presentation on a money-making function in his office, and I'll just let him take the floor.
Hi, councilors. Mark approached me and asked me to explain a little bit about one of the programs that we have in the auditor's office in the financial services area. I know during your 10 years here, you've had a little bit of orientation to the auditor's office and some of the things we do. And this is a program that kind of flies under the radar. It's not a prominent thing if people don't get their paychecks, that's pretty prominent, and that's kind of a big deal. This is a great program that we've had in our office for many years, and I thought I'd explain it to you just a little bit. So my first question is to introduce this. When we think of sales and use tax, most of us think of, well, you know, we go into the store, we buy something, and they add on the tax, we pay the money, and we leave. If all of the sales and use tax in the county worked that way, it would be a lot easier, but it doesn't. It's much more complicated than that. We not only have to track sales tax for those retail establishments, but we have construction sites, we have projects. There's a lot of different aspects of sales and use tax that typically we don't think about. So I have a little quiz to take. We didn't. This is a pop quiz. You're ready. Okay.
I'll watch the champion here.
So if I could get this to go forward, there we go. Okay. So we're going to have a sales tax quiz. Question number one. You're a Portland contractor working on a project at the fairgrounds in Richfield. Are you required to pay Washington State sales tax since you're an Oregon company? When you file your Washington State sales and use tax, that's kind of a clue, return, which location code do you use? You can choose any of the four.
Okay. That's my guess, too.
If it's in the city limits, right? Okay. Well, let's go on to the answer, because we did provide the answer here. Okay. The correct answer is B. It's in the Clark County Unincorporated PTBA, which, again, because of the different districts involved, you have the county, you have the PTBA, which is the transit area. Okay. The name of the city itself is Ridgefield, but the fairgrounds address, although it has a Ridgefield address, it's not in the city. Now, so you're beginning to understand what our business owners face out there, right? On to question number two.
What's the score? Oh, never mind.
We're not keeping score, Mark. Okay? Again, you're opening a new store at the Winco site on 117th and 119th Street. Everybody's familiar with that area across from Prairie High School. When you file your Washington State sales and use tax, which location code do you use? Again, this might be a trick question.
Fifth choice, Clark County Unincorporated.
Stuart, would you like to weigh in? Uh-huh.
They would pay sales and use tax on what they would buy and use as companies in their store, but not that they would collect.
So this is, again, this is a business opening up in that site.
I don't know if that site is in the city.
I don't.
I'll give you a clue. It's in the urban growth boundary. It's not in city limits.
Oh. Well, it's either three or four then.
Okay. It's number three as well. Okay. So you can understand as you go through this how complicated this process can be. The PTBA is the transit district, public transit district. So the public transit can.
But I see the distinction. Everything that's in Clark County unincorporated is not also in
exactly.
The PTBA. So the PTBA.
That's exactly right. Correct.
Mark, I got a question. This is all collected when they fill out their B&O tax form, right? And there is where they fill out their include their use in the sales tax, and they have to select which one. Doesn't that that's been going for years and years? Are we thinking that some of them are filling it out incorrectly?
Well, you know. That's why we're here. This is a map of part of Clark County here, and you can see different shaded areas, right? You're looking at the dark areas, those are incorporated. You have the urban growth areas. One of the things that it doesn't show on this map is the PTBA specifically, and it does show different zip codes. A lot of times in the past, people would rely on zip codes for determining what area they're in. The problem with that is that a lot of these districts overlap. Okay, within a single zip code, for example, the 98662 zip code, you can have all three, City of Vancouver, Clark County, PTBA, and Clark County Incorporated. So even the zip code isn't necessarily a good indicator of where a business would code their sales and use tax.
Or granular choice, the precinct number? Don't each of these
no. have? No, it won't even be by precinct. It could cross boundaries. So what we do is we have, as I explained, the sales tax recovery program. And we have certain tools that we're able to use to help businesses determine where they should be reporting. There's Department of Revenue data that they provide. There's a Department of Revenue website which has the ability to put in an address and it will tell you what is the proper tax code. And in addition to that, we have an internal matrix that we've developed along with GIS to help answer these questions. The problem is getting the information out to the businesses. How do they know where to go? And a lot of times we find out that they either didn't get the right information initially or didn't look for the right information. So we will get information that shows, as we audit it, that it should have been in a different location, and we go along and correct that. And I'll show you that service in a second.
How to get more correct coding for those people who are inputting the code, because whatever you input is pretty much
exactly where it's going to go.
So, and then the second part is about non-payers.
Correct.
Are we talking here about non-payers at all?
No, not necessarily.
That's not part of this discussion, then.
It's a small group, but we're not specifically dealing with those.
Okay.
I am curious at the precinct level because, for instance, in the CTRAN, they are either their ballot is the most granular. The location or the sorting out of who gets what ballot and is at the precinct level. They don't go any smaller than that. So either CTRAN shows up on your ballot or they don't. And the service area is supposed to be equal to the voting area. And
but the tax district area doesn't necessarily line up with either of those. Okay.
Well,
you could be in a precinct that crosses both the unincorporated Clark County and the unincorporated PTBA taxing area.
Separate precincts, and we sort of we fixed the boundary.
Well, and Councilor, you have a very good point. Because of changes of annexation and boundaries that happen things happen all the time, people have questions. And that's exactly why we have this type of a program, because as lines change, there's confusion that's brought in, so it's very difficult if you're on that border to determine. So, going on to the next part of this, and some of these questions will be answered as we go along, Counselor. Here's some of the benefits that we provide from this program. We try and be proactive. Okay, we do get information in, we research it, we audit it, and we request corrections. But in addition to that, we try and be proactive. We try and be a resource for the community so that as they, maybe they're a new startup business, as they have to file their forms, that we can get that information out to them. We have activities that we do, like site visits. We'll go out and look at new businesses going in or new construction, actually drive around the areas so that they can identify those so we can help the business owners. We'll look at building permits. Building permits is a good resource of what's going in and being proactive in helping them understand what area they're actually in and how to find the information of what their taxing district is. We also get information monthly from the Department of Revenue that we can audit. And as we audit that, we can put that into our matrix and determine whether they're correct in where they're reporting. And if they're not, we submit that information to the DOR, and they correct it. They're able to correct it for us. It's our audit process that we go through. So
ultimately, it comes down to layers in a GIS database, right?
To some extent, there is information that is helpful in GIS that helps us do this process. A lot of this happens one-on-one with the individual that takes in the information on our side and the business owner themselves. So, they're able to take that information, and with that knowledge base, they're able to directly help the individual business owners. So,
sounds like great, but I would think that once that knowledge is discovered and we're able to ensure that proper tax is going to the right entity, that the GIS database ought to be updated as or else we're not done with our work.
Right, and there's not a specific layer for this. The cost to put this layer out there is something that we haven't invested in. It, obviously, it's something we could do. There's a lot of changes that would happen to maintain it all along. So we can use the basic information, but to fine-tune it, especially on the border areas. We do have resources that they can look to, though, and I'll show those in a second. We're just a few slides. You're just a few slides ahead. So this is one of the interesting statistics of this program. For the amount of time that we invest in this program, the amount of resources, we are able to recover about $500,000 each year or more to the county that would have not gone otherwise. A lot of times businesses, because they have a Vancouver address, will initially code their returns with a Vancouver code, and we're able to go in and look at those and say, no, you're actually in the county, and they'll go back and retroactively fix this. One of the things that we've never calculated but is even more, important than this is the compounding effect of these corrections year after year after year are significant. Not that $500,000 in a single year isn't, but the compounding effect of having those things correct year after year after year is a huge benefit to the county. Just the initial recovery, we recover about $15 per every dollar we invest in the program. So it's a significant return to the county to have this resource.
That's already been in operation. That's been part, year by year, we are already doing this.
Yes, we've been doing this for many years. I don't know how many, at least the 10 that I've been here and probably 10 before that.
Yeah, I might pipe in because during a conversation I had with Mark, he mentioned that that our IT department has provided them filtering tools that takes the data from DOR and pulls the exceptions out. So they don't look at the entire data dump from DOR. They just look at the exceptions. So what used to take a full FTE only now takes about a half. So that person can perform other work.
Since I have a lot of history here,
30 years ago, John.
When he worked in the auditor's office, you may not have known that.
Auditor's office from 1981 to 1985. And we actually started this program about 1983, and our number one find was that Van Mall was coding its sales tax to the city of Vancouver when, in fact, it was an unincorporated area. So.
Oh.
I'll leave on that note.
Okay.
So, our last slide here, and this is probably the most important slide that we have, is for businesses to know that this is where they can contact to get the information for the correct coding based on their address. The other thing that's nice to see, the Department of Revenue is progressing as well. They have a smartphone app for iPhone and Android to help determine these where the location is. And there's the Department of Revenue's phone number. Internally, we have another contact, a phone number, and an email for anyone interested in getting this information. Again, we try and be proactive, and we try and get out in the community and make sure that we're getting the information out to individuals. But sometimes, as they, it doesn't always come to mind right away that they need to have this information. And so that's probably the most important information that we can get out there, is how they determine where their reporting code is, or what their reporting code is based on their address. So.
That when a piece of land is going to be developed and we receive a building permit, part of that process would be right then and say, well, this address, we look it up, and our staff would determine what that is and enter that at that point. Marty's here. You've got new software coming in.
Well, this aspect of it with the Department of Revenue is, and if you recall, one of the ways that we get the information is look at building permits. Until they, we don't have the link in with the Department of Revenue. I mean, we're not connected to their system. So as soon as they start reporting and they get that information, yes, then we can look and see, well, did they get it reported correctly?
So the Department of Revenue cooperatively provides to us what's new, what new customers have come online, what new reporting have added to their database.
Correct. So, any other questions?
Yes. So, part of this, that we're already doing that, and we've been doing this for some years, I want to make sure I understand what's new.
What's new, as in, it's a...
The thrust of your presentation is to inform us of what the auditor's office has already been doing to ensure that the tax flows into the right direction. We're not making any change to somehow fix what's broken. It was fixed all along, and that's a good report.
Right. The reason why, again, Mark and I, we have regular meetings and we talk about some of the things that are happening down in the auditor's office. This is, even in an orientation or an introduction to the auditor's office, I would doubt that this information was provided to the counselors in the past. It's a program that we have, that we've been doing for some time. So it's informational to you to know that this is happening, and that, you know, it is successful. There is a significant benefit to the county that, you know, we've been doing this over time and that we continue to do this. So
the benefit is that primarily that where it's self-coding by whomever is submitting the Department of Revenue report, what those of us that have been in business fondly refer to as B&O, to correct miscoding so that the county, where appropriate, is given its share of that sales tax. Is that
exactly?
There are some other non-reporting things that we're in the process of looking how we can get more full reporting as well.
It gets every year gets more and more complicated, more and more sophisticated. When the state went to the streamlined sales tax methodology, where it became delivery based rather than purchase based, there's a lot of nuances to the system that change over time that we keep up on, so that the county receives the correct dollars. Now, the interesting thing about this is the corrections don't always go in our favor. When we identify an area that isn't being reported to the cities correctly, we fix that as well.
Sure.
So the impact to the county that, you know, $500,000 a year, that's a net impact after we've made corrections going both ways. So to our knowledge, it isn't being done in any of the cities. They don't have the resources to do that, but they also benefit from making sure that wherever there's errors, it's being corrected. So
in summary, I want to make sure I understand the process. In other words, it's a normal function to say about a half FTE now to ensure that each time that the Department of Revenue receives either monthly or quarterly or annual reports, if they are the first new report or for that address, then we get a copy of that list. The staff here will go through and determine which of those ABCD, what tax code that address should be under, and updates the DOR so that next time from then on, it's going to be correct.
Incorrect, we would submit a report to them and ask them to correct it.
And counselors, even though this isn't a new program, I was struck the last time because the number was very healthy, and I thought, geez, our board doesn't know about this, and they ought to. And so I invited Mark to come explain their program because they're the watchdogs for the county, and this is one of the things they watch, and very, very effectively.
Turn for an auditor, a watchdog. That's great.
I'm sorry.
Business licenses. When someone comes in and applies for a business
at a certain location, it can be new construction, but it isn't necessarily going to be new construction. It can just be a new business location.
That's another resource that we have that we look at.
So, yeah. So if we went back to one of the earliest slides, did I see that we thought, yes, that one.
This one? This one? Sorry.
So we think that due to more accurate reporting, we may recover as much as $500,000.
Well, this is actually based on what we've historically recovered. So we don't think we recover this. We do recover this.
That is what we recover. And do we have any anticipation of what we might recover better through more accurate reporting?
Well, if they were reporting accurately, then it would come to us anyway. This is just based on the corrections that we provide for the Department of Revenue.
All of that isn't net benefit to the county.
all of that is a net benefit to the county, yes.
Okay, I thought that was where I started out with the question.
If you'd like...
You're not talking about a $500,000 increase. You're talking about currently the way you do corrections.
This is money that would not have come to the county if we had not done the corrections. Okay.
And once the if it was wrong for a particular business, they were sending it to the wrong entity. Once you correct that, then thereafter, year by year by year, that continues to flow into the right entity.
Exactly.
If you discover that this has been happening for some time, I know we're trying to keep. I expect that we're keeping this up as current as we can. But some time would go by because they already reported it and went to the wrong place. Do we go back? Do they make that correction after the fact and put the money where it's supposed to go?
Yes, we are able to go back. However, there is a limit to the time that allows us to go back. So there's only a certain time period that we can go back to. So we try and stay as current as possible. No, it's months. Yeah. So. Yep.
That right there is even more importantly
right.
Why it's so important to have it coded properly and for us to be able to identify it.
And for us to stay current on our auditing. So.
Well, some of these businesses, some are annual reporting, some are quarterly, and some are monthly, depending on the size of their operation. I assume the months after the report is received would be the time frame, even if it ends up being for last year, right? Okay.
Kim, in the back, raise your hand. She's a gal that does the work, so thank you. Okay, well, thank you very much, Mark.
I know that.
Okay, with the board's permission, we'll continue, if it's all right. Paul Scarpelli, our multi-role person out of community development. He's the finance manager, the code enforcer, and the animal control officer. Recently created a new program for the benefit of our citizens and to create efficiencies in the county having to do with animal licenses. And so... at the appropriate time, he'll take the microphone.
So similar to Mark asking Mark Gassaway to come today and speak to you about a program that is going well, I think that you know about animal control, however. And we did just implement, after many years of hard work, an online licensing program for dog and cat licenses. So I'm just very quickly going to demonstrate for you where you can go on the internet to find that and kind of let you understand just very briefly how intricate it actually is, and yet I hope it's simple to the end user. So I'm not going to start out, I guess it's fairly easy to go here. Many people would probably come to this page, or if you simply just Google Clark County Pets, it will take you to our licensing page. For some reason, we got a higher ranking on Google than Clark County, Nevada, where Las Vegas is. But if you Google us, you'll come to our page first. So I don't think we paid any extra money for that. So if you just simply make your way here kind of the hard way, you can come to the Animal and Pets page. And right there you see a big friendly link, pet licensing and renewals. So I'm going to click there. Now, I have sped this process up a bit because I didn't want to go through the whole registration point, but you are initially asked to sign in with us so that we understand who you are electronically. We know who you are in our Tidemark database, but we don't know who you are necessarily via a web connection or your email address. So you have to register with us just like you would with Amazon or anyone else where you set up an account, even your credit card, you have to register with them to find out the information online. So this is a completely new page for us. And I'm going to go in and...
And I'm trying to read that fine grade print there in your address bar. It's something ahead of clark.wa.gov. What is that, Pets Online?
Are you up, you're up here? Petlicense.clark.wa.gov.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's fairly clean address there. So, like I said, I've already registered. So I'm just going to go in and show you... who I am and all of the lovely animals that I've already licensed with Clark County. All right, so I'm going to now I'm in. It already knows who I am, and I went into the page that said apply for a new pet, and I'll get to this in a minute. But you can see that if I go to the My Pets screen, it's thinking. I went out yesterday and I registered three animals, and at various. Like some were neutered and some weren't. Some were male and some were female. And I couldn't apply for a senior discount, but a senior discount is available as well. So you can see that I've got John, Paul, George. And I'm going to come in and I'm going to say, well, okay, so I've got a Russian blue cat, a basset hound, and a tabby. And over here is the amount that are due if I choose to pay for those. So I'm going to come in and I'm going to apply for, can you guess who? Ringo. And Ringo, let's go with the dog. Ringo is probably a male, and I'm going to say that he is not altered. He's older than 6 months of age. The reason that is that if your animal is less than 6 months of age, although it's still required to be licensed, there's no fee associated with it. So if Ringo is only a two-month-old dog, a juvenile must be licensed, but the only fee happens on the 6 months. So we will send you a bill 6 minus 2 months from now, and you will pay it at that point. Ringo, I'm just going to do this very quickly. He's a bloodhound border terrier mix. Well, that'd be interesting to see. Color, just pick anything you want. Optional, I'm just going to go with one. You may or may not put in who your vet is. This is perhaps important information for us to share with the vet down the road. Microchip is, again, is optional. So I acknowledge that the pet has a current rabies history, and if one of my officers or they get a phone call from us saying, hey, we'd like to see a copy of that, your animal was involved in an incident, you're acknowledging the fact that document exists. So I'm going to apply. While it's thinking, I guess I'll go into some of the statistics that are there on the page in front of you. So the program went live back right after Thanksgiving of last year, to date as of about 5 p.m. last night, because the program does work 24/7, but we ran the numbers last night just before we went home. There were 208 new pets that registered with us for about three grand in new money. And we had 510 renewals came through for another 8,100. So to date, as of about 5 p.m. last night, we made $11,000. The project itself that
launched
back in November.
November, okay. So since November to now, people are discovering it and they're using it.
Right, and that is without an active outreach campaign, and I think Paul's got an outreach plan.
Getting out somehow.
Pardon?
Oh. We're just getting out somehow.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, wow, that's pretty good.
So you can see now that Ringo is now part of my repertoire I have running around my house. The license expires. It tells you the date 4 months hence, and I currently owe no money on Ringo. Now I can go further on to show you how to pay for all of that, but it's very similar to anything else. You put in your credit card number, you get an email back from us. It's a confirmation and all of that. So the project itself cost us $30,000 to implement. It was about 4 years in the making. We didn't get everything that we asked for. We're hoping to, in phase two, whenever phase two rolls out, to have the ability for when you go to, let's see here. I'm just going to pick one of these to pay. So if you go to the pay now screen, similar to the way that when you pay your, is it your driver's license or your car tab? I think it's your car tab where the state. Yeah, the state adds in the $5 state park fee, and you have to back out. We wouldn't be quite so aggressive, but we would like to have in phase two of our program where you can, where you can donate money. So you could donate money to a spay-neuter program. You could donate money to the hay bank. You could donate money to a very short list of items that we would come up with that are either sister programs or dollars that would directly affect our program. And we believe that that is a rich mine yet not gone into, but that's probably phase two. Also in phase two, we would like to then take advantage of the input that people are giving us with their email addresses so that we could get rid of paper billing and go to electronic billing, save us some money and some time that way. We would also like to have what we're calling an agent portal. So, for instance, this is the customer portal, and I have no idea why it's running so slow for you today. But an agent portal will be someone like a pet store, a veterinarian, the Humane Society, where they would have not necessarily the petlicense.clark.wa.gov link. They would have something a little different so that when you go to the vet, they can either sell you the license directly or take your payment for a renewal right then and there. So an agent portal is something we're looking for in phase two. Another thing that we have seen out there is upselling. So rather than just the little blue tag that we sell all the time, well, maybe we could sell you some rhinestone-encrusted dog bone or a fire hydrant or something and make an extra $10 on it. You know, why not? Everyone else is doing it. And last but not least is what I call a reverse tag number. So if you pick up Ringo and you see the Clark County's phone number on the back of it and Ringo's PLI number on the front of it, his dog tag number, not PLI number, you can call us and we can immediately, or no, you can already call us, but you can go online is what I meant to say and find out that, oh, Ringo lives four houses down and just go ahead and put him in the back gate sort of thing so that animal control officers are taken out of the equation completely. It's just all taking place over the web. So here is where you would potentially see the screen where it would say, would you like to make some sort of a donation to spay and neuter program, shelter services, hay bank, whatever. All right, so are there any questions on the online program that we implemented?
I think a lot of people will find it really convenient.
And especially if you have multiple pets, you can kind of be in the queue. Is the intent to, when you have someone's email, to send them email reminders of when the pet license is expiring annually?
Yes.
Reminders.
Well, when we get that capability. Currently, even though we have been receiving people's email addresses, we're still defaulting at this point to the paper remittance form, which is page 3. Your pet license, well, this one actually says pet license delinquent notice, but this is very similar to what would be the bill that you would get in the mail.
I know. Okay. It looks familiar.
Yeah.
So you will still be doing paper bills for people who choose to write a check when they're paying their monthly bill.
Yes. Yes.
My only concern about this at all is that when I go to this Pay Now page, I'm going, $2? Are you kidding? I'm not going to pay an extra $2
right
to pay by credit card. And I'm not going to certainly pay $3 to do an e-check. So I don't know if there was a merchant account. I don't know how that would work. And I don't know if the county even has any merchant bank accounts. I'm afraid that's going to be a little bit of a deterrent. And even if they ultimately come back to do that, they're going to be put off by that when they first see it.
But Paul, you recited some statistics. New pet registrations and renewals, it was 700 or so, was it, total? People who paid those fees?
Yeah, there's 718 people that, well, 718 pets, so it's probably less people than that, but I think it's in the 500 range that did pay it. I understand what you're saying. The convenience fee is something that the county is not allowed to absorb.
Well, and understand that, because all that does is...
My revenue.
Diminish your revenue when that's already an issue.
So we've had long discussions with the vendor on this, and the county does have merchant banks that they work with, and this is the best price that we could come up with.
I think PayPal is less of a charge than that, but I know that you've done your research, so I don't want to second guess your work here.
And you remember, this was back in the day when gas was $4 a gallon, and you go to an agent. We have agents. We have about a dozen agents around the county, and they're allowed to charge you up to $5 per pet. So $2 is still cheaper than getting in the car and making a payment that way.
And
it's
Paul,
not cheaper than cutting a check and putting it in the mail, but that system is still open to you.
Paul, it's per transaction, so if you renew three pets at once,
right,
you pay $2.
That's why I came back to my pet screen. So if I came through and I licensed all my animals at this time, it would be $2.
I'm curious. We have, through the treasurer's office, a online way of paying, and I thought that one of those choices was like 50 cents or a dollar for to pay electronically in a transaction.
Shaking your head, Mark.
No, it's not 50 cents or a dollar. They do charge as well, and it's probably because those are property taxes. It's probably because of
because people are wanting to... Come on, Mark. Well, it used to be that... Well, why don't you come to the microphone, because we're recording, because... No, you're not... Okay. Well, I know it used to be that they could pay a significant percentage, and on property taxes, it was just... Many people saw they didn't use it because it became so much. But I think sometime over the last year and a half, they came up with a flat, like I thought it was like a $1 fee, that would open up a new channel, a new option of how to pay your property taxes. And I am curious first of all, is that true? I'd like to find out if I'm remembering it correctly. And if so, what enabled them, what channel, what merchant kind of arrangement did they open up to do that? Because maybe that's a channel we could apply here. Anyway, that's just something as a question to see. Maybe there's a way, because if it ends up being a deterrent because it adds a greater percentage here to the overall cost, that would be one way to improve.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'm on the property tax page for the treasurer. If you use a credit card to pay your taxes, the charge is 2.39%. If you do e-check, it's $1.
Buck, e-check. So what's our e-check cost?
$2.95, I think, is what we show.
So the question is, why the difference? And maybe we can align ourselves with whatever solution they had there.
Okay.
So the e-check is the new one I was thinking of. So $1.
Okay, that's something we can look into.
Okay.
So, if people do multiple pets, whether they're neutered or not, all the factors that when you go online and license them for your renewal will be listed. Is there a way, if a person wants to get all their pet licenses in sync for the same time frame?
No.
Not yet.
Not that I didn't think of that. And
of course you would have thought of
it. Mightily on IT, but that's not available yet. You can still pay all of them at the same time, and we will make the adjustments behind the scenes, but it does cause then more hand key information that my staff has to do behind the wall. The customer would be blind to that.
I think it's easier, or they might take Ringo to the pound. I don't know. Can't afford Ringo this year, you know. So I don't know. The other thing is, are other jurisdictions using a similar software? Are we aware of, I don't mean locally necessarily, but
we're rather new. There aren't a lot of counties that or animal control programs that are doing this. They're out there. King County's been doing it for years. So there's no. This isn't software that we bought off the shelf. This is something that we built on our own. The reason being is that Tidemark is kind of an unwieldy beast, and in order to extract the information from that, and then if I were to have showed you the part where you register your home address, it's linked to GIS, and so it automatically populates the address so that we make sure that the parcel and everything is attached correctly, and that when the mail goes out, it goes to the right address. That it's fourth plane spelled F-O-R-T versus fourth plane, which the post office hates that. So there was a lot of behind the scenes things that really didn't allow us to take something vanilla off the shelf and plug it in. There is one more thing here that I want to get to is that if George at some point, my tabby, I recognize that at $20 he is a fertile cat. So I can come in and I can make adjustments to I can make adjustments to all of them, although I can't unalter an animal. Once you say that it's altered, I'm going to believe it's altered, and you can't unalter it. You can decease an animal. You can alter an animal. You can become a senior citizen. You can change your address. You can do all of this online. You don't have to call us. You don't have to send us any paperwork.
An animal that passes away.
Right up the top.
I checked this box. This pet is deceased or no longer owned by me.
I know that you can't unalter an animal. That would be an expensive process if you tried. But the oops factor, somebody's filling this out and they check it and say, oh, whoops, now what? So I expect that we're maybe trying to think this through in removing the flexibility for them to be able to check the right box and fix what they originally filled out wrong, that maybe we should allow that flexibility in filling out the form.
So if I mistakenly state that George is altered when in fact he's not?
Yeah. Why won't it let me fix my mistake? It can allow that.
Sure. We can see what that would take.
I mean, I'm just questioning.
So, counselors, Paul mentioned something about phase two, and phase two is going to be wrapped up with moving off of Tidemark into a new system that has a much more robust interfaces. And one of the things that we wrestled with and decided, you know, that now's not the time is that confirmation of an address, and we really have some challenges on pets that are owned by people who live in apartment buildings, because it's a single address with multiple suite numbers, or you know, 401, 501, 601. So that's part of our phase two, getting the pets all kind of in sequence. So you're paying, they're all their licenses are due and expire at the same time. That was another thing that we looked at. And unfortunately, we were unable to pull the trigger on that. Lastly, Paul mentioned that this has been 4 years in the making. It really is a follow-on from the remittance form that we put together and went through a few years back and figured, can we get to an online type of situation? And a couple years went by where we were looking at a vendor, Sire, who was subsequently purchased by somebody, and subsequently we tried launching on something else, and it really didn't work. So we employed our own IT folks summer of last year, and it took a bit of time for IT, our department, and then the vendor, which is, I believe it's Point and Pay.
Point and Pay, yeah.
Yeah, Point and Pay. So it's been put together really well. We do plan on looking at some kind of marketing, promotional.
Hey, you're getting ahead that you're stealing my show.
So I'm gonna.
Oh, before we get
pull
there,
that, I'm gonna put that thunder over to Paul.
Now, is it Computronics? Is it Time Mark replacement?
Yes.
Okay. I've seen some line items that are pretty substantial for pet licensing. What's integrated into that versus how this being kind of siloed by itself?
So the concern that we had was that we had already waited 4 years and pulling or going live with Computronics was going to take another two. So 6 years since I dreamed this thing up and we were not giving proper customer service in the 21st century using the internet, and we felt as though we weren't able to garner as much revenue as we would like. We're still somewhere around less than 30% compliance on registering your dogs and less than 10% for cats. And I even went out to Washington State University, Vancouver, a couple years ago and got involved with a marketing class that took us on as a study project, and they said the number one thing that you need to do is get on a smartphone. And even that took us a couple of years to get there. And so we're hoping that this opens up a whole new revenue channel for us, and I didn't feel like we could wait another 2 years, and neither did Marty, and neither did IT, and neither did Mark, and Bill when he was around either. So there is a lot that was learned from this and a lot that will be transferred over into the Computronics program when it goes live. So we really do think this was money extremely well spent, and you can, with the numbers that I stated to you already, I'm going to make that money back in no time.
So the one thing on if this moves over completely to the new system, one of the bits to the new system is a cashiering program where the volume of work we have in other lines of business and community development may reduce that convenience fee. I mean, I look at the convenience fee for an e-check at $2.95. The volume of business we do for this in relation to other, I don't think it's there. So maybe that's one positive thing moving on onto a system that has much, much, much more businesses that will have economies of scale to look at the convenience fee being less. And it may likely be through a different, instead of Point Pay, it'll be through Computronics and this teller. So that's something that we're integrating into the new system.
An added benefit is that the basic programming behind this can be adapted for any online payment application that might not reside in Tidemark. And so we are looking at other places to apply this programming.
So if I understand the answer to the question, the loss of revenue that would result waiting, not doing anything online until the Computronics Tidemark replacement was fully implemented, would end up arguing for do something online now, even if this ends up being just simply having a relatively short lifetime, because the new
Correct.
Computronics should incorporate all of these features.
And Correct.
That's why those line items are included in the Computronics,
right.
Because they're going to do what this is currently doing now. This is siloed
and more
right now, and it's going to be incorporated into that system.
Yep.
And certainly, Paul can produce revenue trends to see what kind of increase in revenue this generated.
One of the things we wanted really was we wanted this so that any lessons learned we can take into the new system. And one last point, since we provide services through an interlocal agreement with the City of Vancouver on this service, they help pay for this as well. So the City of Vancouver, they were on board with helping pay for the IT work on this.
I noticed in the, when you brought up your list of pets, they didn't show dates of when that license is up. These are annual licenses, for anniversary dates, right? Here, bring it up. How, is this unusual?
I've never experienced this. I will say, though, that an uncalculated savings has also been garnered from this product as well, because customers being able to go online and change their address, change an unaltered to an altered, used to all be done by hand by my staff. So there's quite a bit of
I'm saving
from the admin crew. Oh, well, that's because they're all current, because I just paid for them yesterday. Under that license expires section.
Oh, you do have.
I believe it's something like 4 months out from the day that you pay it. It'll show up that you can start paying it again. But you don't owe me any money on John, Paul, or George.
One would be just simply to, as a bill-paying system, and that's where you'd only show the license expires when it comes time to that. The other would be just simply as a database that would be useful not only for the pet owner to pay, but for anybody who's going to be handling that or associating that pet with your own staff. I wonder also if in other words, I would think it'd be useful to have the license expires not blanked out if it's some far time in the future. Anyway, just a little.
I believe that was one of the things that we vacillated on back and forth, because if you show when you go to the My Pets screen and for instance, I just registered these animals yesterday when I created my account. The concern was that then citizens would see under that. I'm really sorry, this is so slow, under the expiration field, and they would see that money was still owed, and they would say, well, wait a minute, I just registered. So we made the decision that it's just better to not show anything on that particular screen. There's other ways that you can go find out when that particular one expires. But, hey, I just paid. Why are you telling me the license expires? And confusion.
Shows up there.
I can't tell you the reiterations that we've had on this. I think 63 iterations on various screens.
Right. I assume that if they go all the way through this and they register, do we mail them a tag?
Correct. If they are not doing a renewal, then a brand new dog or cat would receive a small blue disc from us in the mail. Yes.
Can others get to this database, like an agent, a humane society?
No.
Or staff? Wouldn't it be helpful for...
That goes back to the agent portal that we are hoping to get in next phase.
In other words, this
future work.
We'd like to, but we haven't so far. Okay.
And I should put it on record that we're not going to sell this information either.
If somebody mails in and they come in and somehow they use some other way to register their pet, they receive a license number. You have a license number here. So they can create an account, put the license in, put that in there, and see it show up so that it, maybe in the future if they want to renew it, they can. They don't have to start with this. They can just start with any.
Oh yes, I understand what you're saying. Yes, similar to the way that I did it for you today. The county already knows who I am. I already have animals that are registered with the county. I haven't just moved here from California and a new person in our database. So yes, when they punch in their PLI number, I didn't show you that screen, but if they have the bill in their hand. hand or they have some documentation from us in the past, they can type in the PLI or what's called an OID, their owner identification number, and it will recognize who they are after they jump through a few hoops. We're a little bit tentative about having a neighbor dispute turn into some sort of a degenerative issue on our web page where they go out and now all of a sudden I have John Paul, George, Ringo, and I have, you know, Jim, Bob, Joe, and Sue because my neighbor is trying to get back at me and is registering all sorts of pets and gumming up, you know, just because there's some sort of a neighbor dispute that's going on. And trust me, these things do happen. So we tried to shut that off. All right, so you do have to, even though you do have a PLI number, we ask you for a few other pertinent pieces of information to verify who you are. Okay. As Mark mentioned, we have done virtually no outreach on this so far. Intentionally, we've had a soft opening. So we've been out there for about 2 months. We think that that was wise. We did learn quite a bit in those last days. We think that we fixed our last major issue, which had to do with addresses on the back end. The customer wouldn't see it, but it was creating unnecessary work for our staff. We repaired that on Monday. The only outreach that we've had so far is if you looked at this delinquent notice, which is also the remittance form that you tear off and send in the mail with your check and is processed over at Clark PUD. On the back page is this the same document that you receive in the mail. And you'll notice in red that we've kind of got some highlights there that are trying to drive you to our web page. That's new. That's the extent of our outreach so far.
So if we have a date that's coming up for renewal, when they register, I assume they put an email address. Does it automatically send them an email that says, your pet license needs to be renewed coming up at a certain date? Would you?
Yeah, that's something that Councillor Stewart asked as well. And no, not at this point. We are just
phase two.
We're just gathering that information for future use. But, yes, we would very much like to go paperless.
And since it doesn't send out an automatic email, will it also allow you to just simply send out a snail mail reminder as well?
Defaults back to the system we've used for years, yes, where I think it's 6 weeks ahead of time the bill is developed and sent to your address.
So that's automatically part of the system. It just only that will say you can renew online if you want to.
Yeah. 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 Right. Okay. Yeah.
Tell me what we do with kennels and breeders.
You're not able to do dangerous dog licensing, wild animals, exotic animals, kennels, or facility licenses online. They'll still have to be done by an officer coming out and doing inspection, which is part of the facilities and kennel license process.
So they have both breeders and kennels need to be licensed?
If you're a kennel, which we have just a handful in the county, or if you're a facility, which is like a dog wash or a boarding pass. So you're required as part of the annual licensing is to come out, is to have one of my officers do an inspection. So we don't want you to just automatically renew online. We want to come out and have a chat with you.
That makes sense. And for breeders, I'm talking is it when they get sold that we anticipate the owner licenses them?
We would hope, but again, I said the compliance is only at 30%. And if you're a backyard breeder, I probably don't know about you.
So somebody does buy a dog or give a dog away and it's licensed, can I assume they can that the new person would want to be able to go update this? Do they have to... can they just convert the new address and the new owner information on that same license, or do they have to discontinue the old and create a new?
So if you're having the puppies and you're selling them, hopefully you're selling them right at the threshold upon at which they need to be licensed. So
I'm thinking if you already have a pet for 3 years and now it's time.
The licenses are not transferable.
Okay. had a checkbox that says, you said deceased or no longer in your possession.
Right. So I've billed you, or you're coming online and seeing that John is still supposedly in my at my home. I say, no, he's not. That owner is not obligated to tell me where John went.
Yeah, it's similar to the DOL report of sale when you sell a vehicle. In that case, you report who the buyer was, but it's up to the buyer to register the vehicle in his name or her name.
So let's suppose they got a license and you send them a notice because of time, and you don't hear from them. Eventually it works out that, the dog died a long time ago, or we don't have the dog anymore.
Right.
Have they incurred some kind of a penalty they have to get that because they didn't respond? Or can they somehow zero that out when you finally hear from them?
So the way that the system works today is we send you a dunning letter, and then we send you a second dunning letter. And then we contact you electronically through a computer program that calls you. If none of those three results in any sort of a response back from you, either George is I no longer own George, or just no response from you whatsoever, we're going to assume that George is dead and you no longer own George. So we are going to decease him out of the system.
We don't trigger a penalty.
If you come along and we find out 2 years later that George actually still exists, I'm allowed to charge you a penalty, but by and large we don't. We try to play nice. We're just thankful that you're coming back into the system.
George, 2 years ago, was licensed here, and now we come back and we want to. Does it still show up there?
I don't believe it does. I think that once I decease George and I fall out of the program and unlog back in, I think George is gone. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chair, I suspect, based on the body language of Councillor Stewart, that we might lose her here in a minute. Might I suggest, if you have 20 more questions, that we get Paul to sit questions with you and answer them?
I can race through the rest of this, if you would please, because this is really precious time that I rarely get with you. So we are expecting this week or very soon. I've had Holly's wonderful attention in the PIO's office to put out a press release. So we are hoping to get another CVTV spot. CVTV has been very generous with coverage of our different issues, so we're hoping to get something from them. If we can get some of the television stations, that's our best audience, that we can get, Clark County's finally out there in the 21st century, catching up to the rest of the world, and we got online pet licensing. And I'm hoping to get some bump in revenue from that. The local newspapers, obviously, they've always been very good to our program as well. I explained to you the remittance form's been updated. We do have new signage going up in the dog parks that looks like this. We've gone with something a little bit more direct. We've had kind of the cute one in the past where, the dog and the cat with dog tags on them, license tags, similar to what you see just on the homepage. Effective for a while, but we're moving into something a little bit more structured that's in your packet. We've also been trying to become more active in outreach via booths at farmers markets and neighborhood events and whatnot. We've even got our QR code that has got the little pet paw in the middle of it, and it still works. I tested this one with my smartphone today, and it takes you right where you're supposed to go. We are working on some vehicle wraps where you skirt the rigs that we drive around all day. I've got four billboards that have absolutely no advertising on them, driving all around the county every day. I've even gotten the PA's approval that I can actually sell square footage on here, this rig is sponsored by Les Schwab or by Petco charities or whatnot, puts extra money in my account, which it will help me with the need I have for more officers. On here we'll have some sort of a licensing message, the QR code, and giant QR code on the side of our rigs, and some sort of a message perhaps from a sponsor. The next page, the back page, deals with our trying to help with agents and other vendors that might help us in the sale of pet licenses. So I've got the little the little post-it note here on the back page is an example of that's what these are going to be. So they will be just literally tear off. So when you go to your vet clinic, they can tear off one of our mandatory pet licensing, or is your pet license, we get, and put it on your bill. And they might not necessarily be an agent for us, but I know they are a supporter of our program because we're all part of the greater cause. And we're hoping that we're going to get a lot of bang for our buck at us, a little 3x5 piece of paper. We're also trying to work with pet stores directly with signage. We've got an outreach program just beginning with apartment complexes. A lot of their property managers are equally interested in knowing what pets live within their bounds and whether or not they're paying their deposit and whatnot. So we think we've got them on board as being, for lack of a better word, a licensing agent. There's even, in the past, the treasurer has placed in your property tax bill an insert that tries to drive you to paperless billing. Well, why can't I throw in a little insert in every county taxpayer bill twice a year that reminds them that licensing is mandatory and, hey, it's all for a good cause. Even church bulletins they sell. I know my church does. They've got areas for advertising. Why can't I have a little that's very cheap, a little QR code with a simple message? So we're constantly looking for ways to touch people. We also have had lengthy discussions with Camas Washougal about perhaps taking over their program at some point. We haven't got the dollars figured out, but I know they're still interested. La Center and Richfield can't wait for us to figure out a way to take the load off of their police departments. It's a matter of us striking a good dollar amount, and I'm really hopeful that the driving force for us getting over that hump is the proof in the pudding when this online licensing really takes off that, hey, Clark County increased their revenue by 20-25%. Maybe they can do the same for us. And ultimately, we don't have to pay them anything. That they're able to generate enough revenue through the online licensing program that it's just they just get everything. I know they're very interested in hearing more about that. We need a licensing officer at some point in the very near future. We are stretched very thin with our staffing. We only have 4 officers. I know you've heard me say this before. 70% of the year, I only have 2 officers or less on the road, countywide. 2 officers or less. It's really, really bad. The dog parks are a tremendous success in the eyes of the dog owners. They are on the verge of not being able to be handled by either the Parks Department or Dog Paw because I simply don't have the bandwidth to attend to them like I should. I'm part of the puzzle, but I'm not holding up my end of the bargain. So, again, I'm hoping online licensing will allow me to have enough money to go to the budget office and say, here's my money, I'm going to buy an officer tomorrow. We are working with our tablets that we purchased this last year. Unfortunately, Councillor Mielke's not here, but I was going to bring it up very, very quickly on the internet. If you just go to Craigslist, everybody's heard of Craigslist, and you go to the... Oh, I didn't think of that. I had an example out there. We are able to, similar to the way that the Humane Society is doing it right now, post immediately out onto Craigslist. We can take a picture, send it out to Craigslist under the Clark Skamania, logo under Lost and Found, and boom, you can see, we've got this sort of a dog that was picked up at this block. It's en route to the Humane Society. We're anxious to get that really, really going. I don't know that we're going to turn the truck around. I don't know that we're going to have an opportunity that somebody's going to call us that quickly, but yeah, the option is there that we might be able to turn around and not incur the fee at the Humane Society. We did talk to King and Pierce. They both have this up and running. Snohomish, Spokane, and Multnomah. Their animal control program doesn't, but their shelter has what animals are in the shelter right now and when they came in and where they were found. I do have one more handout. There's a spay and save program going on, and so anybody that can get these out into the hands of citizens, that would be greatly appreciated. It's a wonderful thing that has been happening in the metro area for better part of 4 or 5 years, and we've had a tremendous impact on the number of altered animals that are out there, and it's reflecting now in the population of the humane societies. They're all diminishing. There's fewer cats being brought in and everything. It's because of programs like this, so I really want to push this. The door is always open for all three of you, for anybody, to call me up and set aside a half a day, even just a couple hours. Come take a ride along with us. Eye-opening. And we'll set you up with something juicy, and it's a handful out there in the field. So any questions?
Good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counselors. I must apologize for my poor scheduling skills. I will try not to pack the agenda so full next time. Anyway, three good news stories.
Yes.
Good stuff going on in this county.
Keep in mind, because we're interested, we ask questions, and you may look at how long it would take to make the presentation and then add to it our interest that is manifested with our
Exactly. And I'm glad you let Paul present, because he's doing good stuff.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.